From the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald, I'm Luis Hernandez. A century ago, developers and speculators raced to Miami for its growth potential. And over the past 100 years, many groups have benefited from economic opportunities in Miami. But in a new book, history professor from Johns Hopkins University and South Florida native N.D.B. Conley shows how during all this prosperity, African Americans suffered greatly from Jim Crow laws. Conley will be speaking at this year's Miami Book Fair International, and he joins me now. N.D.B. Conley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you want to tell the story of Miami's growth through the lens of the Jim Crow story?
There's a lot about Miami's history that gets branded as being a decidedly Caribbean city, especially since the late 1950s and early 1960s. It's almost as if the story in Miami kind of begins with the arrival of exiles from Cuba after the revolution there. And so part of what I wanted to do was to show how Miami had been a Caribbean city from the 1890s well into the 1960s and 70s. And so I wanted to show how those two things work together, the segregation that marked Miami's earlier history and the development of the city as a kind of global metropolis that really did have its face toward the Caribbean but was always deeply committed to dividing people along perceived racial lines.
Throughout the book, you point to incidents of violence, and at times there were actual literal walls built to separate groups. Perhaps the strongest tool, though, that city leaders and developers used was zoning. How did they make that work?
The Supreme Court decided in 1917 in a decision called Buchanan v. Worley that racial zoning was unconstitutional, and yet the practice continued through a variety of proxy terms. So you see, for instance, the development of the Miami Central Negro District, or what is now known today as Overtown, being an area that is zoned almost exclusively as industrial land, and yet almost 50,000 people live there in residential housing. And so it made it very difficult to get housing updated, renovated, to have really, you know, quality construction there, because it was a violation of city zoning to build, quote unquote, residential property there, even though it was clearly in place.
Shortly after the Cuban Revolution, there was a common phrase in Miami, "if it wasn't for the Cubans." How did the arrival of Cubans affect race relations?
Long before the revolution ever happens in 59, you have a number of affluent Cubans who are developing ties with local elites in the city. And this goes back into the 1920s and 30s. They have bank accounts. They have real estate. There's a whole kind of class of people, mostly affluent, brighter or lighter skinned Cubans who are living in the city, you know, for 20, 30 years before the revolution happens. So in many cases, they get a certain kind of safety net. There's also a kind of geopolitical imperative that comes out of the White House, but also through the CIA and the Small Business Administration, that's trying to make sure that the Cubans succeed and that they're given certain kinds of refugee payments that are not actually available for black populations. But to get the same kind of payment under welfare, African Americans and other black migrants had to be sure there was not a man living in the house. There was actually a gender guideline that said that if you were going to be eligible for welfare, you couldn't have a working, able-bodied man living in the house. And that was a unique requirement for only those black folk who were getting government assistance, not for migrants coming from Cuba. And so one of the key figures in the book, a man by the name of Luther Brooks, who's a property manager, goes before Congress and testifies to this kind of inequality in terms of the kinds of government assistance being made available to Cuban new arrivals versus those of African Americans. And he's able to recognize the problem because he's the one managing the rental properties that are basically falling into default as renters are unable to make their payments. So as African Americans are suffering economically, he's the first one to see it because he's on the ground dealing with the tenants.
N.D.B. Connolly is author of A World More Concrete, Real Estate and the Remaking of Jim Crow South Florida. He'll be presenting at this year's book fair Sunday at 1:30. N.D.B. Connolly, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Luis.
This is WLRN Miami Herald News. I'm Luis Hernandez.